I hit record. Actually, I'm going to lower my standing desk.
Oh, you switched over to a standing desk, huh?
Yeah. Let's see here.
Is it one of those automatic ones that, like, you can just press a button and it, like, electronically lowers?
Yeah, it's super cool.
Whoa.
Let me...
That's pretty fancy, Rob.
Took a video of the construction. Where did it go?
Where is it? When you had to postpone this yesterday because you were building your desk, I had a feeling it was something extravagant, and it I was right.
Oh man, I'll find it and send it to you later. But I made a little time lapse because I. It came in three boxes, and that's a whole other story. But looking at the instructions, I was like, oh, crap, I'm really in for it.
It's not quite IKEA.
Yeah, no, it's solid wood, like actual real wood. I feel like an adult now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man.
My standing desk is definitely IKEA. It's actually just one of the ones that's supposed to be a table that you like fold out from the wall, but I just set it up at standing desk height.
Oh, okay. So it's always standing.
Yeah, it's bolted to the wall. So
okay,
but you can fold it down. So if you're not using it, you can just not be protruding into the room. Yeah, it's pretty nice. I have like a whole little home studio setup now. Oh, I got a couple of monitors. And an audio interface. And
yeah, I think everyone is kind of setting up their home studios now. kind of have to.
Yeah.
I've wanted to get a nicer desk. I had like this $75 IKEA desk. It's literally like that plank of fake particle board, whatever, and in four legs. And I mean, it was fine. You know, I had it for like 7 years and it did its job, but being at home now every day for a couple of weeks, maybe 3 weeks now, and I just got my tax refund in, and so I was like, okay, this thing was, you know, $700. It wasn't a cheap one, but I felt like this is a appropriate like long-term investment, and you know, I'm planning to work remotely soon enough anyway. When Mary has to go work in the hospitals, then, you know, we'll be in Pennsylvania. So during those couple of years, I'll be just working from home every day. So
yeah,
I just started it a little bit early, I guess.
Yeah, you gotta get yourself in a nice situation.
Yeah,
it's funny you're talking about taxes. I've been like wanting to do my taxes, but then like the one thing that's holding me back is that usually every year I make like a big contribution to my IRA.
Oh yeah. Oh, and but yeah.
Right now I'm like, oh man, do I really want to do that bit? But it makes a big difference to my refund. Like if I do that, basically it's like I lopped off $6,000 from my income and then I get a bigger refund.
I've heard that's a good recommendation. Yeah. I have an IRA, which basically is just rolled over from my old 401k. Because it's weird when you leave if you have a job that has a 401k and then you quit, like it just sits there. It's stale. Like nothing gets contributed to it because there's no more paychecks going in. And you can't tell your new employer like, hey, I already have a 401k. Please use this. They, you know, every job sets up their own account. So it was a zombie 401k for a year or two. And then I, you know, finally, because I don't know, all that stuff was very like foggy at first. And then I started to like look it up and learn about it. And, turned it into an IRA, which for people who are like me, maybe a few years in the past, totally confused by all this shit. Basically, once it's an IRA, now it's like, you know, a savings account. I'm free to put stuff into it. Whereas the 401k is, you know, it's like it's only through your paycheck. So I've got 401k through my job, and the IRA, long story short, I'm not contributing to, but it is set up. So it's, I can contribute if I want to.
Yeah. Are you doing the Roth IRA?
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. I can never remember the difference.
Well, the Roth IRA is the one where if you can contribute to it and then get a tax deduction. A regular IRA, you put in, because you're, well, in the, sorry, the Roth IRA, you're putting in post-tax dollars into
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's
so,
what
like,
I am.
So you're already getting taxed on the income and then you're putting it in there. But the IRA, you can contribute tax, wait, hold on, I have to think about this. You contribute it tax-free, but then you have to, I don't remember. I shouldn't
mislead people. I'm
starting
to discover why the podcast is not so popular.
Because none of us know shit about anything.
and we're talking about taxes. Yeah.
Yeah. I just remember it was the right one for me because I know that I won't have to pay tax on my gains, which now seems like a joke because I don't have any gains.
we will in the long run.
Yes.
We're not old yet, but.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
Also, before we get too far into this, I think it's kind of funny. The last time we had an episode, you and I, we were talking about coronavirus, and I was talking about how it was way overhyped. And I don't really feel like talking too much about coronavirus because I'm sure people also want to take a break from all that news. But I think it is worth saying that I was obviously very wrong. And at the time, did not have, you know, there's very little info about the portion of deaths to the infected. And in the beginning, it looked like there were a whole lot infected and very few people were dying. So yes, it was scary, but not deadly scary. And, you know, obviously anyone looking at the news now in Italy, there's a person, dying every 10 minutes. And in New York, hundreds have died, and it's very real and very terrifying. I actually woke up this morning, and kind of what I typically, a trap that I fall into is checking Twitter updates, and just through kind of like this unlucky sequence of posts, I read this thing about a doctor. I won't get into it, but it was a very sad post about how, you know, she's now having to treat her own friends and colleagues and afraid to even go home at the end of the day anymore because her children are there and she doesn't want to infect them. And someone else posted like their 97-year-old grandmother has it now and she likes cats, so please post pictures of your cats. And someone else, a young cardiologist got it and he's, you know, in the intensive care unit on a ventilator and stuff. And so it runs the gamut of, like, you know, obviously the old and kind of feeble are you know, not in good luck, but even the young and, you know, people who are typically healthy are also at an extreme risk. So I was just reading all this stuff and out of nowhere, I just started crying. It felt like really just futile, you know, whereas for the longest time it was, you know, news alert, kind of like a tornado or a hurricane is coming, where it's a mixture of fear and excitement. But now it's just fear and anxiety, and just even going outside, I feel like one slip up and I could die. So yeah, that was really heavy.
Yeah, that's pretty intense, Rob. I don't want to say that your fear is misplaced. I mean, I think that, like, the whole, like, one slip up and you could die thing, I think that's, you know, I don't want to fear monger at all. I think that there are vastly more people recovering, you know, than dying. It's important to remember that. And I think that number, that's obviously going to keep separating as this thing goes on. It's going to be way more people recovering than dying, but
yeah,
it is like nothing to mess around with, you know? And I think, yeah, of course we were wrong about it being like not that serious and way overblown. You know, you have to take it very seriously because the biggest problem is that if you don't take it seriously, then it becomes so pervasive that you don't have any control at all.
And I don't think, you know, no one should have to live in fear, and I don't want to encourage fear, but I was thinking, you know, I was talking to Mary the other day, her whole family's in North Carolina, where it's like kind of showing up there, but it's not a huge deal. And we're taking all of these extreme precautions because New York is kind of the epicenter of it right now. We have the most cases. And really, I think our excess of caution comes from so much fear. And so, you know, we had this chat with them last night and talked to them about how scared we are and how scary it is, and kind of implored them to be more safe. You know, like her cousin hugged my mother-in-law the other day. We're like, no, like you can't just, you know, even though they seem healthy and, yeah. You know, I think we're human and we're emotional, obviously. And so we kind of assume like, oh, it's my best friend or it's a relative, so it's safe. But it's, you know, they might look and feel perfectly fine and they could have, you know, just got it yesterday, but they're not going to feel any sick, you know, until, you know, a few days later. So all I mean about all this fear is that I got a little overwhelmed about it and I need to step back and maybe play with my synthesizer a little bit and enjoy some music. But on the other hand, I am kind of trying to talk to my immediate relatives, I guess, about the fear and how real it is, because I think that they are only beginning to be cautious as soon as they actually become fearful of it, because the lack of fear and like, oh, there's only like two cases in my town. They feel like, oh, it's not here yet, or it's not a big deal. And I would rather just act as if it were a big deal everywhere and then, you know, find out, okay, yeah, it was no big deal, but at least everyone's fine.
Well, that's true. I mean, because you have these little like mini outbreaks that happen. So like, once it hits a city, then it's, you know, obviously like cities like New York and Chicago and LA and San Francisco are like taking like major precautions because so many people can get it because they're in such a small proximity. But even in these smaller towns, like if you just pretend nothing's happening, then yeah, a lot of people are probably going to get it in the town.
Yeah.
Anyway. It just makes sense to just have have everybody act the same in the whole world, really, for a while would be. And that's what they're trying to do, it seems like.
Yeah. I haven't really left the house except to get groceries, and that's it. I did take walks for a few days, but there were too many people out, so I went back in. But they're doing an official shutdown as of today on Sunday in New York, so maybe it'll be more sparse out there.
Yeah. I mean, we've been walking our dog every day. We take him to the beach, and there's like hardly anybody there. And we're, you know,
as long as you're not touching stuff, it's
fine. We're not touching, you know, we just have our gloves on the whole time and don't really touch anything. So it's, except the dog. So I'm not really that scared about it here. And also, I'm not really seeing anybody else, I'm not really like at risk of infecting other people.
Yeah. Me either. So, I just, you know, get overwhelmed by the news sometimes. And, you know, you see people my age or even younger who've passed away from this. And I'm like, oh, my God, like, you know, just one, you know, you forget to wash or something after your groceries. And I don't, anyway,
well, try not to be too scared, Rob.
I found that music is a nice relief. And I started, before we were talking, I was watching this old documentary that I liked in high school about Buena Vista Social Club. I don't know if you've heard of them.
Yeah.
It's, and I don't know, it just immediately kind of like blew all that stuff away and brought me back to a peaceful mindset.
Yeah, it's really nice. And, you know, both my partner and I are music teachers, so we're converting to being able to teach online, which is why I have all this stuff.
Oh yeah.
Now I've actually got my button gear and, you know, figured out how to do all of it. I actually start those online lessons. I did a few last week, but I mostly start up next week. I have like 16 or 17 students that I'll do during the week.
That's interesting. I wanted to ask you about how you do that, and I know your partner, has she always been doing them online, or is it a mixture of she'll do some in person and some online?
It's been a mixture, but she's always had a lot of students online, like at least 15. Right.
As so we've heard in previous episodes.
Yeah, so she's like, no, this is no problem. It's like what I do. But I kind of am been trying to get it figured out. And I actually realized I had a lot of tools, you know, and I've just learned how to use them. So that's been really cool. But I moved like all my instruments home. So I have a marimba here, which is like a really big, a little bit. It's like a really big xylophone. And I have like my drum set and, you know, a couple other drums so that I can teach all those different things. And it's really kind of cool. It's, you know, made me think about like what I'm capable of doing, even if I, you know, wasn't able to go to a school to teach or anything like that. Like, I never thought about really teaching percussion online too much because it just seems like a hassle, but I'm kind of excited to learn about how to make that work in a meaningful way. So
we need to talk to Scott because it sounds like this is what he's doing too. I've been seeing his pictures bringing equipment home and stuff like that.
Yeah, for sure. I look forward to when we can get, you know, all of us on a podcast together and do some Blue Lake reminiscing too.
Yeah. I don't know how you would teach music online because, I can see how, you know, for example, like there's, you know, you can go to YouTube and learn how to play piano by watching someone. But in my limited experience as a student, a lot of what I got out of piano lessons was just that in person, you know, interrupting me and then showing me how to do something, adjusting my posture, a lot of that kind of in-person physical stuff that I imagine could be lost when you're doing virtual teaching.
Oh, it definitely can be somewhat, but I, you know, some of it's just like thinking of it as a challenge of like how it actually will make you a much better teacher. Like, how can I give a verbal cue that will result in what I want to see in them? Which is like it's a super important tool to, because sometimes you'll be in a situation anyway, even if you are in person, where, you know, like being able to touch the student or that kind of thing is just not really, it's not going to work for whatever reason. And then having this arsenal of like words that you can use that aren't, because usually you have to end up talking around it. It can't just be like, oh yeah, just like, you know, sit up straighter. That usually won't make someone sit up as straight as you're looking. So you have to find ways of, you know, asking them to imagine that there's like a piece of thread coming out of the very top of their head and that someone's pulling on that and like what that would do to them, you know, and then they visualize that and they kind of do it. And then you get, you know, you get the thing you're looking for. These things already exist in almost every sport and instrument anyway. But yeah, I mean, I agree. Obviously, it's nice to be able to your final sort of like fallback scenario should be, okay, I'm going to go and literally position them. Because if you have to do that, then they're relying on you and they won't do that on their own at home. Okay. They won't have a tool to test it, you know, besides someone just positioning them. So
That's what I was so used to with my old Polish piano teacher. She would just like grab my wrist and she'd be like, no, do it like this.
Yeah, and there are some things, especially with in drums, like the way we use our arm to drum is like so intricate and so varied that sometimes like I have on occasion, or actually pretty regularly with some of my high school students, just say like, okay, I know, I ask them first, like, is it okay if I touch your arm? And then like I like make them go like, you know, dead fish, like as limp as possible, like, and then I kind of show them the mechanics, you know. And sometimes it's really hard to, because everything is so small in your wrist and stuff, like to really be able to have the mental control until you feel the thing, you know, I can say, you know, you have to use like 25% more wrist, but that doesn't really manifest in anything if you've never used your wrist that way. Like you have no context. So yeah, that part, you know, it will be difficult, but I think of it as more of a challenge than like a barrier. So it can definitely be overcome and it will just make me a better teacher.
Yeah. Have you started any of these online yet or you just,
I did three last week. But cause I wanted to do a lot of testing of equipment and, just it's really interesting. I'm going to have to like really fine tune my schedule because I have to do like completely different audio setups if I'm doing drum set or marimba or snare drum. So I'm going to try to like refigure my schedule once I know what everyone's going to like kind of focus on so that I can be prepped and do like five lessons on snare drum and not have to move everything around.
right,
every time, because that's,
I mean, it's, I guess it's a solved problem because people do record percussion, but I've always kind of been in awe that you can, you know, do stuff with microphones and percussion and not just like, you know, max out the volume and have it sound terrible on the other end.
Yeah, well, that's interesting because I, you know, one of the things that's been kind of a saving grace, I think, is like this microphone sounds really nice for me to talk into.
Yeah.
And so I use two microphones when I'm doing the lessons. I have my Zoom, which is like a condenser. I guess this is a condenser too, but I kind of set this microphone I'm talking on now up right by my face so that I can talk at a normal volume and it's really clear.
Yeah.
But then I have the Zoom a bit farther away and it's picking up the room sound. Mm-hmm. So I can adjust those two different things so that, like, when I do, like, because when I play the drum set on this microphone, it picks it up, but it's not, I don't know, this, it seems like way more directional than my Zoom, even though it's like, if I talk past this microphone, like if I'm talking over here, you can really tell the difference, right?
Now, yeah,
versus,
yeah,
now when I'm talking directly into it. So it picks up the drums in kind of that, you know, ambient way, which is not very much, but then I have my Zoom kind of positioned somewhere else that I can turn up or down to pick up.
Cool.
The room sound. So that way I have really clear voice. I don't have to like lean down to a microphone. It's just right in front of my face. And
you're able to get the Zoom, because the Zoom records locally, but you're able to like pass it through so you can send it to a video chat.
So the Zoom, I have an H6 and that's like, I think it's one of the newer models and it actually acts as an audio interface. So I'm using it right now.
Oh, okay.
Actually, I just have the stereo left right part that sits on top of it. I have that turned off and it's just using this microphone. But yeah, you can plug up to four microphones into it and use it as an audio interface. So I've been doing that for the lessons. Yeah, it's pretty nice. Actually, I'm kind of proud of myself for figuring all that out.
Yeah. I mean, we all got to be kind of clever and resourceful about how we're adapting to working at home. But I, you know, I'm looking at the positives of this, of how, you know, I mentioned how I'm eventually going to have to be working from home, like not permanently, but, you know, for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And I've brought it up with my manager before and he's cool with it. It seems like it, but you know, he's like 90% cool with it. He's still got a little kind of, iffy area where he's like, okay, yeah, well, we just need to make a game plan and talk about how it's going to work. And so that way, when I, you know, tell the higher ups, above me about, you know, you going off to work remotely, that it's going to work out and it's not like you just piecing out or anything. So it sounded
well,
like
this,
you know,
should smooth all that over.
Exactly. That's what I'm thinking. It's like, well, now everyone has to work remotely and we're all on an equal playing field. We're in it together. And so, you know, nobody can give me shit anymore about wanting to work remotely because we all did our jobs just fine. Maybe a little frustration, but the job still got done. And so, you know, you can't tell me that, like, oh, you're not allowed to work from home because we need you in the office. I think so much of that is just culture and just being used to that.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, of course there's benefits to being in person, just like we talked about with teaching or, you know, in business, you know, sometimes you need to have an important meeting face to face, but honestly, like the majority of it is just, you know, work you're doing and communicating through some emails and chats and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, there are certain processes which are much, much better handled in person. I have found this at least in, you know, the field that I do. So, I mean, I've done some grant writing. I've done a lot of arts administration. And I find that, you know, doing those things is kind of fine. Like once you're communicating ideas that have been formulated already, like video is totally fine. Working at home is fine. I find that the creative process is much harder for me, at least personally, to handle online. Like when we've had a couple artistic meetings with my percussion group, and it seems like when you're on a meeting, you're kind of like tethered to this like video screen and microphone, mm-hmm. or whatever. And that tethering makes it feel like this is a temporary thing. Like we're in a temporary state right now. And like the goal is to get out of the state. So it's like really good for meetings because everyone, I think when they're on a video call, they're like, I can't wait to get off this video call, you know? So they're like, everything's much more concise. I have found that anyway, whenever you're having like a meeting about very solid, you know, goals, it's been a little bit easier to like not have those meetings drag on. But yeah. And when you want the opposite to happen, which is like an artistic meeting where you're coming up with ideas, you actually want it to, you know, keep blossoming and go outward. It doesn't really want to in the same way. And that's at least just for me and the people I've been working with.
Yeah, that sounds kind of challenging. You're like, okay, well, we're going to have our conversation over here, and then we want to, you know, wrap this up so I can kind of be freed to, you know, go explore. I like the, it's probably not very conducive to what you're talking about, but in terms of creating this sense of presence of, you know, there's just other people around you working and you're not necessarily in a meeting or talking. I was tweeting about this, I think, but not everyone reads my tweets, of course. And when I was in college, I had this website for our podcast, actually, because we were podcasting in college ages ago. And it was, I forgot what we called the page, but it was just this separate page on the website. And we had embedded four copies of Livestream, or maybe it was Ustream. I don't know which the website was. And it was the four different URLs for me and my friend Mike, who's been on the show, and Josh, of course, and Nick, who, oh yeah, Nick had an episode or two on here. So, and then me. So all of us were on there, and we would just leave the camera, usually built into like our iMac or laptop plugged into the wall. We would leave that in kind of the living room, a public space or whatever, and just leave it on. So like you could walk by and see what someone else was, you know, doing at their house. So it was like a semi-public, private, like just ongoing webcam feed. That was pretty cool to kind of feel like our houses were connected. And sometimes, you know, I remember we'd see like Mike was playing video games or watching TV or whatever. And then I would walk up to the camera and wave to him. And then we'd end up like going over to each other's houses. Nowadays, we've got even better tools, although we kind of lack that persistent kind of public aspect of like where you can go to live. Well, it still exists, but no one uses it. Where you can go to live stream and just kind of have a webcam always on. But now everyone is using things like Zoom and this iPhone app called House Party. I don't know if that's on Android or not. And stuff like that, where you can just kind of like have these casual hangouts. They're also used for meetings, of course, but or Zoom is. But what I've been doing personally, which is the long about way to get to my point, is I've got, you know, my video conferences at work, but in the corner I have Zoom going and it's on mute. And I also have my friend Chris, and he's, you know, doing his work at home, doing his own thing, also on mute. But we just can see each other in the corner of the screen, just always going the whole day. And so I can look up, you know, and I also have two computers. I've got the iMac and then I have my work laptop. So maybe I'm on my laptop and I can kind of look up the iMac and I see like, oh, yeah, there's Chris. He's eating lunch or whatever. And once in a while, Josh also joined us. So maybe there's a few people on there. And, you know, of course, we talk to each other and hang out. But the point that I'm trying to get at is I would like to see more people just kind of doing ambient video where you just it's always on, at least during the workday, maybe. And there's no obligation to like engage or have a meeting, but it's just there so you can look up and maybe you're alone in your apartment, you know, if you don't live with anyone else. And you can look up and just see that, oh, there's other people kind of going about their lives. And that's a nice way, I think, to kind of simulate this social aspect that we've lost.
Yeah, it's not a bad point. I think one thing I would worry about is the collective bandwidth usage. we don't want to shut Zoom down for all the people using it critically at this time, which people live streaming there 24 hours a day. But
they'd probably give some sort of warning or whatever of like, oh, we're running on low bandwidth or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure. But yeah, no, I think that's, you know, that sounds like something I used to do, like when my partner and I were living in two different cities. You know, you just kind of
like, oh, really?
Leave. Well, you'd like spend an entire evening with it on, you know, and you wouldn't always be like sitting right in front of it or talking directly to them, but it felt like you were kind of, you know, hanging out together.
Yeah, that's cool. And I've done that with the Echo show, the one with the screen on it, when Mary was at school in Philadelphia and I'm at home in Brooklyn. We each had one of those because I got one of them for free and then I bought the other one. And so it was like a little portal that would kind of connect us. I put it right next to the TV so I could sit on the couch and watch TV and she could just watch me. And she needed to study, so we just put the volume down at zero, but we could look up and see each other through a little window.
Yeah, yeah. I think that stuff's really nice.
Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, I feel like I have, you know, certain friends that maybe think it's creepy or they think it's distracting. I don't know. I'm referring to Mike and Nick because I have a chat with them and I keep talking about like, oh, yeah, let's hang out on Zoom or whatever. But I don't know. I think they're both developers that their type of work is like, you know, writing an algorithm or something that is really intense problem solving, or I guess just even, you know, if you're writing a book or something, it requires a lot of focus, and they don't want to be distracted by having a video in the corner or something. But for me, not that my work is, you know, mindless, but it's visual. Like I'm just drawing stuff on the screen and I'm correcting, you know, making sure all the buttons are aligned in the same position and little stuff like that, that I can easily like look up and glance around and my concentration isn't really broken by that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure it would fly in this household either, just because I just think, I mean, I wouldn't mind it necessarily, especially if it was confined to like a very specific space. My partner's definitely not into that.
Yeah.
She's like, you know, like tape your camera, like that kind of like people are watching you.
Well, for sure. You know, for like when you're not using it, you know, you feel weird about someone potentially using it without your knowledge. But if I have it running and I can see the little preview, you know, of what is showing, it's like, okay, right, it's me at my desk and maybe my refrigerator behind me. I'm not too worried about that, but yeah, I understand the privacy concern.
Yeah. And just forgetting that it's on, like, I think that'd be the biggest thing for me. I would like totally space and be like, forget it was on. And we'd be like, I'd be connected to you, Rob. And I'd be like, man, Rob was just so boring today.
And yeah.
And then I'd be like, oh no.
Shit.
Yeah,
that's awkward. Well, that's why you stay on mute, I guess.
Oh, I guess that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You'd be working and then you let out a really loud fart and then all your coworkers hear it. And
yeah. Or it might make you feel pressured to observe like office norms in your own home, which might also be kind of weird.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess that's true. Like I only do it with my like friends, not my work friends per se. Although there's this other app, I guess this is just like a topic of the week now, is all these tools. But I found another app called Jamm, and it's with a double M, J-A-M-M. And it's
Jamama.
Yeah, I use that with my work friends, actually. We don't do any work conversation on it because it's not approved by Amazon. But we do casual, like, hey, how's it going video. And it, unlike Zoom, is asynchronous. So you can do a video call, but you can also just like post a little video clip in your little chat room and they can do likewise. So it's kind of back and forth, you know. So whenever you're at your desk, you can kind of see what they were up to and vice versa.
Oh, I see. I'm on the website now.
Yeah.
So you could like, if you were like working with a team, you could just like quickly record a little video question. And like it would go on like a stream or something, and then like somebody would see that and then respond to it. But it doesn't have to be like,
yeah,
you don't have to be on a video call with them.
Exactly. I mean, they did design it for business, but we're using it for informal purposes, like just chatting. But if you look at the website, they have a lot of business cases. Like you can share your screen and be like, hey, I'm working on this document and I ran into this thing and I don't know what it means. You know, let me know what you think. And then you can send that video of like your voice plus like the screen on the computer, and then they can check it out whenever they want.
Oh, this is great. I should do this for my lessons because there's like a lot of Zoom settings that I want people to change, and I could just like post a little. Do both people have to have this software, or can you just make a little video and then like share that little video with people really
quickly? They do have to have it because it functions as like a chat room that contains the videos.
Got it.
But I mean, if you're just looking for a way to record instructions, you can open up QuickTime and record your screen. Yeah, I won't do it right now because I think it will take over the audio from our podcast. I can show you later. But basically, it's one of the options in QuickTime. Is there's like new audio, new movie or new video, and then when you do video, select the screen as your input, and it'll record the screen, and you can just kind of make your instructions and then send them that video.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really good idea.
I don't know. I've always had this fascination with like these cool like tools for connection, I guess, and like sharing videos and the always on kind of streaming, like to simulate like a portal to the other, you know, from here to LA or something. Mm-hmm. I remember I did an interview at this company a long time ago. Didn't get the job, but they had a big screen TV with like one of those fancy conference cameras on top of it, and it showed a kitchen, and they said that's the kitchen to their LA office, and then they had the same thing going in New York office, and it was always on, running like Cisco WebEx or something, and so they just said, you know, we have a big team, and it's, you know, not for meetings, but it's just always on, so you can walk by, wave hello, someone else can walk by, wave hello, and if you want, you can turn it off of mute and like have a quick conversation, but really it's just there to simulate closeness, and I like all that kind of stuff. I feel like not that many people are interested in it, but now in these recent times people are starting to pay more attention.
Well I think that like we are reaping the benefits now of all this technology. I think that, you know, personally before all this I was one of those people who would say like I'm not a huge fan of all those things because it discourages in-person connection, like for the sake of like the ease of just doing it online or whatever. And I have, you know, I still find those in-person connections to be like so important. But of course now it's like really, really useful to have all that stuff because it is now the best option.
Yeah. And I agree, you know, like I prefer hanging out with my friends in person if I can, but I know, you know, Chris moved to San Francisco for a couple of years. Now he's back, but like I used to hang out with him all the time in New York, and then he moved, and like I didn't have anyone to hang out with, and so that was kind of shitty. I mean, I had Mike to hang out with, but it's harder when you're both couples, and like, you know, he might be doing something with his wife, or, you know, I could rarely have people over here since Mary uses the space to study, but mm-hmm. I don't know, just different schedules. He's a social butterfly, I think, and so he's always got stuff lined up with some other friends. But anyway, a long story short is, you know, Chris moved out to San Francisco for a while. Also Josh, you know, he lives in LA. He's been in California for years. And just stuff like that. It's great to have something to keep in touch. We even started this podcast as a way for me and Josh to just talk, you know, because I guess we're too uncomfortable with our emotions to actually have a phone call. But if it's a project, then we can, you know, have a conversation and record it and make a website and do all this nerdy stuff because that's fun. But, you know, the silver lining really and the purpose is that we just get to hang out and talk more. And just like you and me, you know, we hadn't talked for a long time. And then you came to New York and now we're starting these podcasts more often. So it's kind of like we can hear more about what's going on.
Yeah, for sure. I'm not a big phone person in general, like even with people I'm really close with. I don't know why.
Me either.
I find it to be such like a annoying medium, I guess. I don't know.
It feels almost urgent. Like Like, yeah. Because I called you, you have to talk to me. And
right. I think that's
I feel
true.
Bad asking you to talk to me, you know? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, it may just be the way I was raised a little too. I mean, my family was all like, we're Midwest. And so I'm not saying that all the people from Midwest are like this, but we say like what's necessary to say.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of stuff that just kind of, you know, lingers around that doesn't Same. Get said. So whenever I have a phone call, like it's always like, you know, we talk about what events have occurred.
Right.
And, you know, Weather. How we're feeling and whatever. Yeah. But it's not like, I mean, some people like to have the conversations like you have in person where, you know, like you're kind of like offload about your day or whatever. And I was like, I don't mind that as much in person, but on the phone, for some reason, to me, it feels often just like excruciating. And I think yeah. it's because I'm not getting any of the visual feedback too. The like, you know, seeing the person's face and seeing how that, you know, they're like cues that they have, nonverbal cues that like kind of tell you how they're, you know, how they really feel about it, or you can like do a lot of intuiting by looking at someone while they're telling you something. But when you're on the phone, yeah. it kind of just feels like, it's kind of like reading a text stream of someone complaining too. It's like, okay. You know, I guess you yeah. get a little more because it's verbal, but.
Yeah. And I find it really hard to like, just like, let's just call just to chit chat.
Right.
Which is kind of funny because I explicitly set up this podcast as no agenda, no schedule, and no topics. You know, and it's inviting the weird and sometimes interesting tangents that, you know, you have in conversation. That's why it's sorry to get back on topic.
Right, right.
So, yeah, in a way, I don't know. I don't know what it is really, but I feel more comfortable just like catching up with friends as a podcast. It's almost like you're externalizing it. So there's like you, there's me, and then there's this third entity, which is the podcast. And like, we're both doing it for the podcast as opposed to me calling you on the phone. And we just have to talk to each other for no other reason except for staying in touch with each other.
Yeah. Well, also there's like, I think in a way, I think the third entity, the podcast you're talking about, and like really, truly, it's like the audience for the podcast. Yeah. It gives it this sort of urgency to be interesting. Like, I don't think either one of mm-hmm. us we're not going to delve into some super specific thing that's like happening at work and then dwell on it, because mm-hmm. like that would just wouldn't be interesting to people listening. They'd be like, I don't know right. these people. I don't know anything about this. So why am I listening to it? But I think the way you choose to talk when you're on a podcast that other people are listening to are like, well, I want to say something that is not just like on my mind, but like, I mean, you kind of do, but you also want it to be somehow received and relevant by someone who knows nothing about you.
Yeah, definitely.
So that makes I feel like that makes the conversation a lot more interesting because yeah. it's not kind of petty, or it doesn't involve anything that's like a minor detail. It's kind of like, it ends up being these more overarching collective topics that all people understand.
Yeah, and it's more. Not like I'm necessarily like censoring myself, but you know, maybe I'll take something that I'm experiencing or have thought about, and then I express it in a more generalized way, so, you know, that hopefully right. more people will resonate with or be interested in or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
But on that note, so you texted me like yesterday and wanted a podcast, but I had to build this damn desk and it took me like 4 hours and then I was exhausted. but yeah, now we're chatting now, which is great. But did you have anything in mind that you wanted to talk about? In particular?
Not particularly, actually. Okay. Especially now, it just seems like such a nice thing to do because it's, you know, something different than just being at home.
Yeah.
Although it would be interesting to talk about what things we're doing at home to, you know, occupy our time. My general like sources of, what's the right word? Sources of diversion, I guess, the fun uh-huh. are like have mostly ceased to exist, which are, you know, I enjoy watching a lot of sports. And there are no sports happening. Like if I find myself at home on a Sunday. Yeah. If I find myself at home on a Sunday with like nothing to do, I'm like, oh man, I'm gonna watch so much soccer and probably Formula One, and like I don't have to worry about anything. I could just sit here and absorb that, you know?
Yeah.
And now I'm like, oh man, I have all this time at home, and I'm like, oh, those things that I would normally do with all this time at home are not happening.
That's so funny, because I would among other things, I would typically like watch TV or play video games, and that's exactly what I do now.
right. Yeah. I have been playing some video games, although I'm trying not to get like too far down that rabbit hole, because I don't think that
Why
it's
not?
Particularly great for me. I mean, I still think like all the same warnings about screen time, just because like they're the only option right now, doesn't mean that they don't still, the same harmful effects might not still be there, you know? So I'm like, you know, trying to not overindulge in things, trying to keep about my screen time about the same or maybe slightly higher than it was in normal life, just because I don't know. I feel like there's probably some lasting effects to that.
I mean, I'm thinking of just like physical activity, but apart from exercise, what are you worried about anything else?
Well, I think that, you know, there's like the circadian rhythm issues and like a lot of blue light stuff and all that. And so it's really easy for me to get, you know, sucked into a video game and then play it like late into the night.
Yeah, true.
And I think that's pretty hard on you. But it would be so easy to do in this setting. And even during the day, I think it may not be, I don't know that it would necessarily be great just to be staring at a screen all day. Like, I don't know. Like, I'm not founding this on any like solid science, but just the way that it's made me feel. Like, there have definitely been times when my partner has been like gone for the weekend, and like I have like a little bit of a binge. And not because I necessarily intended to, but because it's like there was nothing else to do or going on. So I was like, well, why not just watch this whole series on Netflix? Or, you know, why not like play 4 hours of this game straight? And and then like how I felt after that, like both from a emotional perspective and a physical perspective, was like not really ideal. It wasn't like I wasn't like in, you know, bad health or something, but it was, I was like, that feels, you know, not great. Like, so maybe I should, you know, meter that out
I've
a little bit
the
better.
Same. I agree on that level. And I think it has helped that, you know, work is still continuing for me. And so I have to, you know, get up at the normal work time. So I'm also kind of keeping my regular bedtime. So I'm not just, you know, staying up till four or whatever, playing like it might be if it were a holiday. But I do like playing games, and I've been playing stuff like Mario Kart and whatnot. But Chris just got a Nintendo, so now we'll be doing some more games online together. I like that. It's funny. I am, but I don't consider myself a very social person. But I have such a strong just gravitation to doing stuff online with my friends, like playing games online, or like I just talked about, you know, for half an hour about the video chat and stuff. I think maybe part of it's just an anxiety of just, you know, not being with myself alone very easily. I've been very out of the habit of meditating. And so I think perhaps the opposite end of that is just this gravitation to always staying connected to other people and kind of like sharing that space with someone, because as long as you're sharing a space with someone, you don't have to be alone with yourself, maybe.
Yeah, that's very true.
And I never thought about that until it came out of my mouth.
Yeah, I mean, oh man, this whole thing, like this coronavirus thing is not good, obviously, but it is showing the world, it's holding a big mirror up to the world, and there's going to be a lot of, I think, great things that come out of this time that we're all forced to spend.
I think so, yeah.
You know, quarantined or whatever. Or just the idea that, like, all that social stuff that you felt like was so necessary, and it's not unnecessary, like, but all the stuff that you fill your time with, like, you're now realizing for a lot of it how it's actually not as necessary as you thought it was. Like, it's not that it's not good to do, but it's
you're just more conscious of it now. You're aware of it, I guess.
Yeah, and I think for, you know, myself included, like, I am always the first person, or I was always the first person who'd be like, okay, well, we don't have anything going on tonight. Let's call up, you know, our friends that live over there and see if they want to do a board game night or go out to eat. And it was never just like, well, let's just enjoy a night of, you know, nothing, not having anything going on and just kind of relaxing. And now we're like forced to do that like almost every night. And it's we're learning. I think we're learning how to be comfortable in our own skins a little bit more. I think we will learn. Maybe we haven't learned yet, but we will, or at least hopefully a lot of us will.
I think it's a learning curve for sure.
Okay. Yeah, I'm really interested to see what, you know, like a year from now, assuming everything is completely back to normal in quotes, like how society will have shifted, even just, you know, a few degrees from where it was, because now people have this like new skill of knowing how to be with themselves or be, you know, or maybe they picked up during that time, this like odd, like 5-6 month blip in history, they picked up this like skill or this other, you know, like, interest or hobby, and like that just wouldn't have happened otherwise. And so that's really interesting to me to see what the world will be like, when everything kind of returns.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like, you know, I feel like it's ironic because I used to be into meditating on a regular basis, and partly that fell through because I was going to a place to do it. And when I got my job, that's an hour and a half commute, basically, I would just go home after work. I didn't go there to meditate. And I find it pretty hard to do it at home because of all the distractions. Although obviously you learn to let those distractions kind of pass over you eventually. But I've fallen into this habit of so many distractions. And so I'm at this point, I think, in the learning curve of awareness now. Like, I just became aware as I was talking to you about how the uncomfortableness of being alone. And I, you know, I'm sure there's still plenty of people out there who aren't even aware that that's going on with them until they sit and think about it. But then if you can make that observation, then the next step of moving forward, I think, of learning how to be alone, or even if you have someone with you there, but just, you know, sitting with the quiet or just looking at and talking to each other, I think that's another learned skill that will take time. Probably not everyone is going to come out this, you know, like a Buddhist monk or anything, but hopefully, right, as you said, it'll be by degrees, you know, even just, you know, 2% shift, everyone is a little bit more, you know, internally cool, or I don't know, a little bit more mindful. Maybe that'd be good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think one of the things that I noticed immediately, you know, I'm also out of the habit of meditating, although I'm making it a goal of mine to get back on the horse given the situation. One of the things I noticed so quickly is that, especially with like people or things that bother me regularly, like being more mindful just made me be nicer. And so I think that like maybe we'll see hopefully a little bit of that rub off on people, like where just the general collective is just a little bit more understanding and nicer to each other.
Just like a patience.
Also just because they're so much more grateful to be out with everyone again, where it's like you just took it for granted before. You now have this like experience that makes you go like, man, this is actually kind of a gift to be able to connect with all these different people or see all these different people. And kind of, hopefully, if you're really mindful, knowing that like each of these people, like over the last however many months, like went through this thing that we all kind of did together. We all had to like cope with it together. And like, yeah, actually we are like all one one thing, you
it's,
know.
It's yeah. You know, it's I thought that this was the case with 9/11, but I've never felt it to this degree, but it feels like it's, you know, it's a collective trauma in the way that the Great Depression for a generation was, and that the, you know, the First and Second World Wars were for other generations. And it makes me think of this time. I was like 11 or 12, and my aunt took me with her on a trip to Paris, which, you know, that was super cool and everything. And I took a camera with me, and took a lot of what I thought were artsy black and white photos and stuff, really great view from the Eiffel Tower. And I brought them back, showed them to my grandmother, and she was like, really nice about it, but she was like, these are really nice pictures, but there's no people in them. You know, I thought I was going out there being like a photographer, like, you know, documenting Paris or whatever. And she's like, just remember that in a few years, you're going to wish that there were people in there, you know, of your aunt, or if you turn the camera around and take a picture of yourself. This is before selfies. And she's like, you know, saying how like it may not feel interesting when you're there at that moment, but when you share it to other people, or when you look back, you know, in a long period of time, you will be glad that you took a picture of a person in there. And that just kind of mentality, like turning the camera around, I guess. We don't have that problem in our generation, but the spirit of the feeling, I think, is there. You know, that's something that she learned through some sort of set of events in her life. And, you know, we're kind of learning that now firsthand in our own ways. And like, you know, like if it's just going out to the bar to do trivia with friends, like I do, like, I don't know, now it's going to seem a lot more special.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that one of the people who are the greatest gift to the world are people who just like to take pictures, candid photos of like, I think the, like, I don't know, that doesn't happen a lot. It doesn't happen a lot, but there are like some groups I've been in where there's been that person who just likes to like be taking pictures. You're not doing anything like serious, yeah, but like you're just kind of hanging out at the beach, and then someone's just like taking candid photos. And those photos are the best photos. Like, I'm not a huge fan of posed photos.
Right.
Especially like if the posed photo becomes too much of the point of being somewhere. like, oh, I came to Machu Picchu so that I could take a picture of myself at Machu Picchu. Like,
right.
You know, you have to make sure you're actually looking at Machu Picchu, right? You can't just like,
yeah,
go there and say, oh, I got the picture. Okay, next thing. But the people who take these candid photos, it's just like when you go back and look at them, I always feel like so like this immense gratitude to those people in my heart, because I'm like, oh, like there's like me actually like there's a picture of me that puts me in that place so much more than the posed photo. It's like that was me actually being at this place doing this thing, like not me posing, yeah, for a photo. That was me.
Your
actually
genuine reaction
being there. Yeah. Yeah. And that's like
yeah,
so
you're
nice.
On the beach and you're like just wholeheartedly laughing or something. It's different than the, you know, forced kind of grin or something like that. Or, you know, you're at Machu Picchu and someone captures the side of your face kind of just like in awe or really interested in some kind of detail. Like that is what you don't get when you pose for a picture.
Yeah, or just in like a really genuine smile or something, you know, like yeah, those moments are so nice. And I am so grateful to those people, because if those people are doing that, they are not there, you know, they're kind of like sacrificing their ability to be there so that other people can have those memories in a way, you yeah, know, because if you're just taking pictures of other people, you're not really, I guess you're kind of there in a way, but you're there through a lens. You're not really, you know, you're not engaging in the same thing that those people are engaging in.
Yeah.
But it's such a gift that you can give people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So apart from video games and TV and stuff, now that I have my desk all set up, I am distracting myself with my instrument once again, my synthesizer.
Yeah.
Have you been playing more music for yourself at all, or does it feel like work?
No, I have. We'll see to what, you know, it's about to get really dense musically in my household here, because we just set up our schedules, and I mean, every day of the week there's going to be music lessons happening here. And some days it's like I'm starting as soon as my partner's stopping so that we can fit them in, you know,
right?
Because we can't really teach at the same time. It's just too small of a space without enough soundproofing. So, you know, I might actually experiment with doing some in here while she's teaching, because I don't really hear her playing that much in here. So maybe I can do some, like, once I know what people are playing.
Problem for her.
Well, no, but you know, I do like snare drum lessons. Will be on like a practice pad, which is actually quite, you know, it's not that loud. Don't think I could get away with actually playing real snare drum or real drum set. My drum set has these like mesh heads on it that don't make a lot of sound. So that works out. But yeah, I have been, at least this week, I started relearning some Bach, you know, and it was actually really nice to relearn some of that
marimba?
Stuff without marimba. It's actually a lute suite, so it's made for lute, which is like a Renaissance era guitar. It's been really nice to kind of feel like I had the freedom to, like, well, I don't have to move on from this phrase until I really have it the way I like it. There's no like pressure to finish this or anything.
It's just for you.
So I spent, you know, a lot of time. I think my partner's getting a little annoyed. She's like, you keep playing that same thing over and over again. And I was like, I'm just trying to like really figure out to unlock it in a way, you know, like how does it really land, you know? And I've never really done that before. It's what you should do, right? As a musician, you should do that. And the best players, you know, they search and search kind of for that. And that's why they're like so sublime when they perform. But it's really hard when you're on a deadline for anything to not have the mentality of like, okay, I got to get through it. I got to make sure I can do the whole thing. So that's been really interesting.
There's this interesting, it's funny that you described that, because I remember feeling like that sometimes, but also feeling guilty, people in the house, having to hear the repetition. There's some sort of, you know, this disconnect of the observer or whoever's, you know, listening to you play over and over again. They're like, oh my God, this is so boring. You know, why are you playing the same thing? But I could sit at the piano and do like a particular phrase for, you know, an hour and just, I don't know what it is, just get lost in it. And just to try and like slowly, like just align like what the sound is versus what the sound in my head is and try to like get it to match up. And or sometimes take an old piece that like maybe I knew it well and I'll play through it and then I'll try really hard to make it sound differently. And I think that's a fun exercise, especially when, you know, you have to stick to the written notes. Like if you're playing like a Chopin waltz or whatever, it still has to be those notes. But how do you take the same notes but make something different? And so you kind of stretching, if it's like a game of Twister, you have to put your hand on the red dot and the yellow dot, but you can put your body however you want. So it's this feeling of like, you know, okay, I'm playing this, but I want to like make it feel different in some other way without hitting, you know, any of the wrong keys. And that'd be like this fun activity, mental activity that I'm going through. But of course, the poor people in the house are like hearing me play the same song a million times.
Yeah, that's just one of those things. It's like, sometimes you don't want to know how the sausage is made. Like, you just like the end result. Yeah. But like, if you have to, you know, and I think we both went to music school, so she understands, of course, like why I'm doing that. That doesn't make it less annoying. Yeah. Because if you're not tuned into it with the same level of detail, right. I mean, if you are tuned in that same way, you could really hear those differences and it would be interesting. But if you're not, then it does sound like the same thing, because you're not actually hearing the micro levels of detail. You're just hearing the macro, and it's the same, you know, your brain's being triggered by that same thing over and over again. So I get it.
Yeah. But this reminds me of, sort of related, I don't know if, maybe you've done this, but I have talked about adagio a few times on the podcast. not trying to push it on people, but it's just such a really cool service because it's all about, you know, classical music, and it has such a depth of recordings on certain pieces that I like to go and hear, you know, 20 different performances of a familiar song. And it's really interesting to kind of like hear the differences. Anyway, they just released this new feature. It's in beta called Live Compare. And you can, right now they only have it with Beethoven's Egmont Overture, but you can hit play and then scroll through multiple albums of, you know, different conductors and different, you know, ensembles performing the same piece. And they're using their technology to sync it up. So as you hit next, it plays the exact same note, picking up from there, but with a different performance. So you can seamlessly hear the unique flavors of that. And I think it's so fun to play around with. So, and since I last talked about it, by the way, it has become free. So if anyone wants to try it out, you can do Adagio for free now. I think the paid stuff, it just gets you the higher quality audio. But if you're into classical music, that's fun to check out.
Yeah, and that made me think of another thing, which I don't know if you know, Rob, but the Berlin Philharmonic's Digital Concert Hall, until March 31st, mm-hmm. I haven't actually signed up myself, but I think I'm going to do it right now. Their whole like archive is, which is what their digital concert hall is free for everyone.
Oh, wow.
It says you have to redeem this a voucher code by the 31st of March. But you get like everything that they've recorded, and there's some like really great stuff in there. And it might be a nice way to spend, you know, one evening where you're not sure what to do and you kind of want to be enriched. Like, cause I know that their productions are really, really good. Like I've heard a lot mm-hmm. of people talk about them as being like really excellent production quality. So, you know, find yeah. a piece you really like and watch the Berlin Phil play it. Oh, cool. You know? So, yeah.
Yeah, send me the link and I can put that in our podcast notes. People can click on it. Mm-hmm. I'm just looking to see if there's anything online that explains this live comparison I'm talking about. It's a beta feature, so it doesn't look like they're talking about it on their website. But, you know, if anyone goes to get the app or, you know, make a free account on there, then maybe you'll see it once you're signed in. But, it's a cool feature that kind of seamlessly connects it. But regardless, it's a nice service because, you know, if you're looking at like for 30 different recordings of Egmont, then, you know, there you go.
Right, right. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that there's a lot more kind of free services coming out now. You know, even Audible, where I work, full disclosure, but they're doing... free streaming of their content. Not all of their content, it's mostly like kids, but they also have some classic books and whatnot. And I think that is stories.audible.com. I'm just typing it as I say it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So people, you know, want to get into some audiobooks and you don't want to pay for it, then you can do that or get them from your library, but that works too.
Yeah. Thanks to you, Rob, I've been listening to a lot of audiobooks, a lot of Tom Clancy novels.
Nice. Yeah.
I'm not sure if you're into that kind of thing, but they're
I probably would be. I just haven't tried it out. You know, actually, I've been so sucked into podcasts. You know, once you subscribe to like 4 or 5 podcasts, that's like all the time that you have to listen. And
that's
so,
true. Yeah.
You know, now like I just try to get through the podcasts and, you know, the news and stuff like that. And I don't end up getting to the audiobook. It used to be that, you know, I would fill in the time with the books. And maybe I just had like 1 or 2 podcasts I would listen to. Sometimes once I get a really good audiobook that sucks me in, like a movie where you just like want to keep listening and listening, then I will ignore my podcasts. But
mm-hmm.
Lately, like this last year, has been the opposite. There's been so many good podcasts. Like there's this one called The Dream, I think I also mentioned this on the podcast. I can't remember what I say anymore. And anyway, it was all about like pyramid schemes and like from the point of view of the people who like get sucked into it, like selling like LuLaRoe or Mary Kay and the stuff that seems, you know, very innocuous. It's not the product is really harmful and it's not that the person is up to any wrongdoing, but the whole structure of it is basically that you can never profit from it. And so I don't know. It was one of those like juicy investigative podcasts. But yeah, I haven't listened to any podcasts now that I'm working from home. So I need to figure out how to get some time to like listen to podcasts or audiobooks or stuff. I can listen to music in the background, but I'm kind of missing out on these interesting stories because I just get up, you know, have my breakfast and then I start work. And when I'm done with work, I guess I go to the TV. So I don't know. Maybe I just have some listening time.
Yeah, I listen so much in transit. Like,
yeah, exactly. I don't have that anymore.
Now there's no transit. Yeah, yeah. I have noticed that. And all my like walk, I sometimes I listen like when I walk the dog or something. But now I'm always doing that with my partner. So, yeah, that's really interesting. I hadn't really thought of that.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a huge deal, like, oh no, you're missing out on some form of entertainment, but it's a little bit more than entertainment because it's like infotainment, you know, like depending on what you listen to, you're entertained, but you also feel like maybe you're a little informed or you're learning something interesting. So,
yeah.
I noticed, maybe we just suck, but I've noticed that our podcast count has kind of decreased in the last like month or two.
But you mean your no personal or Audible?
Yeah. This personal. Sorry to get back on topic.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we only ever had like maybe 100 people listening, but now it's like 30 or 20.
Oh, so, I see.
Who knows? Anyway, I think I should kind of wrap stuff up and get on with the day. I kind of spent the morning just hanging out and getting set up and all that. I haven't really done much else yet.
Yeah, I guess I really haven't either. Too
lazy
much.
Sunday.
Yeah, it just feels like every day is kind of the same now. I hardly even notice when it's the weekend, I feel like.
Yeah, but I know. It kind of blurs together. But you know what? Also, in trying times, it's okay to give yourself some slack and, you know, be lazy if you want to be lazy.
Yeah, of course.
Don't be too hard on yourself. I'm speaking to the general public, not specifically to you, but yeah. Take it easy out there.
Yeah, for sure. This has been a nice diversion. So let's do this again soon.
It is. It's good catch up. Yeah. And so I mentioned Scott earlier on in the podcast, and nobody has any idea what we're talking about. So for context, we've got this other friend, Scott, who, you know, I actually don't even know what his official title is, but he's like a director of an arts program. And I know him as a percussionist because that's what he was doing when we worked at the Blue Lake Fine Arts Camp. And so he's in, you know, music education, and I've been dying to chat with him on the podcast because it seems kind of similar to the stuff that we've had conversations about. So maybe if we can get all three of us together, we could have a talk about online pedagogy and just music and community music. I think that'd be really great.
Yeah, and then if you get one more pianist to join too, we can play Bartok's Sonata for two piano and two percussion.
Yeah, totally.
We can do it live via Zencaster.
Yeah, like the YouTube symphony.
Right, yeah. Something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right, well, great talking to you. And likewise. Let me know when you're down to do it again. I think I am a lot more available now.
Sounds good. Maybe we can do one a week or something.
Yeah, sure. We'll have a backlog. All right.
Sounds good.
Okay, talk to you later.
Yep, see you, Rob.
Bye.